Mary Sponholz, Deputy City Clerk, joined by Jessica Ferguson, Permit Technician.
Warren Frace, Community Development Director.
Wendy Wang, Outside Counsel.
Go ahead, David.
Chris Huat, City Manager.
Elizabeth Hall, City Attorney.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have report out from closed session. Attorney Elizabeth Hall, can you let us know what we talked about?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The council convened earlier today and went into closed session on conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D1. The name of the case is Steinbeck Vineyards No. 1 LLC et al. Versus County of San Luis Obispo et al., and there is no reportable action.
Thank you, Lethal. Next, we have three presentations. We'll begin with Juneteenth, and then we have California Mid-State Fair Update, and then the 4th of July event preview. So if I could have Robin Johnson from the San Luis Obispo NAACP come join me, please. Okay, proclamation declaring the third Saturday in June as Juneteenth Day in the city of Paso Robles. Whereas since 1865, the American celebration known as Juneteenth has historically been observed at the end of the institution of slavery in our great nation. And whereas Juneteenth embodies the indomitable human spirit of the past, the present, and all time. And whereas the celebration of Juneteenth gives all of us the opportunity to rededicate ourselves to the true American spirit. And whereas we are citizens who wish to secure the blessings of freedom, justice, and equality for all in this great nation of ours. Whereas June 19, 2026 is Juneteenth Day, an observance of a federal holiday in the United States commemorating the end of slavery. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of the authority vested in me and as mayor and speaking on behalf of the entire city council, do hereby proclaim the third Saturday in June 2026 in the city of Paso Robles as Juneteenth Day. Tobin, you'd like to say something?
Yes.
You bet.
Mr. Mayor, council, my name is Tobin Johnson, as I mentioned. Last time I was before you, I was the president of the NAACP SLO. I am now the communications director. But I wanted to thank you all for this proclamation, as well as invite you to two amazing events this weekend. The first one being at downtown City Park here in Paso at 1 p.m. And then in SLO, we'll be celebrating at Mission Plaza from 11 to 4:30. So please come out and support these events. This is a lot of history that we want to make sure we cherish that history and support the cause. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor. Take care.
Moving on, you're here. California Mid-State Fair update. Colleen texted me just before. I should tell everybody, you texted me because you were down at the other location. Yeah.
That's how my life goes right now. I went to City Hall and then was like, oh shoot, they moved.
Welcome, Colleen.
I'm coming. And of course, gave myself plenty of time to make that in time. But thank you all for allowing me to come speak today. I really have two parts of a presentation, and I'll start with the business side of things since it's not as sexy or exciting. The Paso Robles Event Center is one of the city's largest tourism generators, operating as a year-round economic engine. While the California Mid-State Fair serves as a major summer economic accelerator that drives visitation, employment, and spending throughout the region. The Event Center is widely recognized as the home of the California Mid-State Fair, but its impact extends far beyond the fair's 12-day run each summer. The facility operates year-round, serving as a regional destination that attracts visitors, supports local businesses, generates employment opportunities, and contributes to tourism-related tax revenues. Throughout the year, the Event Center hosts approximately 55 interim events with an average attendance of 1,250 guests per event. We're proud to provide a world-class venue for events that showcase the industries that define our region: agriculture, hospitality, tourism, and Western heritage. Events that celebrate our community's identity while generating significant economic activity outside the fairgrounds, such as Firestone Walker Invitational Beer Fest, Paso Robles Wine Fest, and Cal Poly's Western Bonanza, just to name a few of our local ones. Some of the largest events of their kind in the world call the Paso Robles Event Center home, and we have worked hard to improve our grounds year after year. These visitors contribute directly to the local economy by utilizing hotels, restaurants, retail establishments, gas stations, wineries, and other tourism-related businesses. The resulting visitor spending generates economic activity that benefits businesses throughout the community while contributing to TOT and sales tax revenues. The California Mid-State Fair, of course, serves as the Event Center's largest economic driver and one of the region's most significant tourism events. During the 12-day period, the fair welcomes around 370,000 to 400,000 guests. The event consistently coincides with some of the highest hotel occupancy levels experienced throughout the year and generates substantial demand for lodging, dining, transportation, and retail services throughout Paso Robles and neighboring communities. And I will tell you that my daughter supports all the downtown businesses wanting a new outfit every night for fair. Mm-hmm. In addition to attracting visitors, the fair supports local employment through seasonal hiring and provides opportunities for local businesses to engage directly with hundreds of thousands of consumers. More than 100 local sponsors annually partner with the fair, reflecting the business community's recognition of the fair's economic and community value. The fair also supports youth, ag, and local nonprofit programs. Over $3.1 million was generated at last year's Junior Livestock Auction, $235,000 at the Industrial Arts Program, with easily 90% of the buyers being local men, women, and businesses. In 2025, the California Mid-State Fair donated $50,000 to participating nonprofit organizations, including 4-H groups, youth sports teams, schools, and churches who sold our carnival wristbands. Taken together, the annual fair and year-round interim events create a continuous cycle of economic activity. Interim events sustains visitation and commerce throughout the year, while the fair serves as a major summer accelerator that significantly increases regional visibility as well as being a time-honored tradition. As communities across California compete for visitors, tourism revenue, and economic investment, the Paso Robles Event Center remains one of the city's most important economic assets. Its ability to attract visitors, generate overnight stays, support local businesses, create jobs, and showcase Paso Robles to new audiences provides measurable benefits that extend well beyond the facility itself. And now for the fun part, part two. That's what's happening come 29 days, just in case you're wondering. Let's talk the fast approaching 2026 California Mid-State Fair.
Oh, that's me.
That's okay. It's all good. This year, we'll be celebrating our 80th fair, taking into account in the 40s when we didn't have it for World War II, and then, of course, 2020, and then we had a modified fair. So we're at our 80th fair, and our theme this year is Back to the 80s. And staff is taking this to a whole new level. This year, we'll have theme days. All 12 days, there will be dress-up themes for our patrons to come. Totally Tubular Summer, Rhinestone Cowboy, or Born in the USA, with staff handing out on-site spot prizes for the best dressed. And of course, our mullet contest is Tuesday, July 21st. So start, you could do it. I'd love to see it. We have our Cattlemen's Day, another time-honored tradition, Thursday, July 16th, honoring this year's Slo County Cattlemen, Cattlewomen, and Agriculturalist of the Year. And then check out their window displays. Do I need to talk louder? Check out the window displays in Frontier Town. That explains the rich history of these organizations in our county. Friday, July 17th, we'll be honoring this year's top winemaker, wine grape grower, and wine industry persons of the year, as well as honoring the Central Coast Wine Competition's winery of the year. We have additional events within our event. Get Crafty, where mixologists combine local farm-to-table products and local crafts into a tasty competition. Our Central Coast Wine Competition gold medal wine tasting, where you can sample the many wines that won gold medals or double gold medals during the Central Coast Wine Competition. Industrial Arts will be back showcasing high school students across the county who have drafted projects from welding to woodworking, and of course our exhibits building showcasing the best of the county, what they have to offer in sewing, art, photography, floriculture, and so much more. Kids Day on the Farm, where kids can experience a farming demonstration, participate in planting, watering, harvesting, and enjoying the fruits of their labor with literal fruit. Horse Show, we have new events this year. We have a ladies open breakaway, and we have a trails course. Then, of course, the return of Farmers Olympics, our sorting, our country rodeo. And then you have our livestock area where 4-H and FFA exhibitors showcase their livestock to see who will take grand champion. Shopping, dining. This year, a fun dining experience is Old West Cinnamon Roll is having a tiramisu cinnamon roll. Classic cinnamon rolls drizzled with a fresh coffee, covered in rich espresso-infused cream cheese frosting and topped with a sprinkle of chocolate chips and a dash of cocoa powder. So if the sugar didn't keep you awake, the coffee will. And if the day-to-day activities aren't enough, we're offering ways to save. Farm supply admission is on sale now, June 8th to July 14th, discounted daily admission tickets, where you can get an adult admission ticket for $11.50. Normally at the gate, if you wait, it's $15. The first day, our first fair day, which is July 15th, it's free carnival ride days. But you can buy, prior to this, to the fair, you can buy wristbands that are good any one day of the fair, and they're on sale for $35 through numerous nonprofit organizations, and they get a portion of that back. New this year also, we understand that the economy is hard for families and it's a lot to spend, and we have a lot of staycation dollars here. But we're trying to help people a little bit so that they can come and enjoy. And we have a new happy hour. So every Monday through Thursday from 4 to 5, and every Friday, Saturday, Sunday from noon to 2, there will be a variety of items available for only $5 during that time, and every single vendor is participating. Whether it's a corn dog, lemonade, deep fried something, we'll have something from every vendor. And then to stick with the 80s theme, we have a little small roller rink that we'll be having that's free to all the patrons. They paid to get in, and then you can go and skate around just like Skate More or the Skate Ranch if you're that old. And then, of course, we have six stages of live entertainment. Our Fort Frontier starts with the Miss California Mid-State Fair pageant, founded in 1969 as the Maid of San Luis Obispo County, and evolved to a modern scholarship competition that empowers young women to embody the heart of the fair and the Paso Robles and the Central Coast community. Then we'll have local artists High Voltage, Mickey Dolans, another local artist, Sasha Carlson, Noel Torres, John Hollier and the Reverie, another local artist, Stephen Stiles, Shenandoah, Something Out West, which is Tom Hanks' son, for anybody who knows, Low Cash, Queensryche, and Gerardo Colonel L. Jerry, Harry. And of course on the main stage, first ever pre-fair concert, should be super fun, and it is a lot of logistics going into it, but we have Chris Stapleton on the 14th of July. Then to kick off our concert series for fair, Old Dominion, Ice Cube, Lainey Wilson, Eric Church, Phil Wickham, Megadeth, Howard Jones with Modern English, English Beat, and Wang Chung, Willie Nelson, Treaty Oak Revival, Three Dog Night and Ambrosia, And then you can come and see our local cowboys and cowgirls compete under the stadium lights in our 805 Country Rodeo Finals. To round out the fair, we have a good old-fashioned tractor pull on the last night. For six generations, 80 fairs, families have made memories at the California Mid-State Fair. Grandparents who once exhibited livestock now watch their grandchildren in the show ring. Parents who attended concerts for the first time are taking their kids to a concert for the first time. And they're all experiencing the same traditions. The fair's the one of the few places where our entire community comes together, urban and rural, young and old, longtime residents, and first-time visitors. We hope you're able to come and enjoy these traditions as well as make some new ones. So thank you for having me today. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, Colleen, it looks like to me we're up a couple days on the month. We're starting a little sooner than we did last year, it looks like. Is that?
Yeah, so that's just the way the calendar falls. Yeah. We had the choice to be the 15th or the next week. We try and keep it within the month because it helps with payroll and paperwork and all that fun stuff.
Keep out of the heat, hopefully, too. Chris Belch.
Yeah. Hi, Colleen.
Hi.
Great presentation. Thank you. Great lineup.
Thank you.
For all the concerts and on both stages, all three stages, I guess. Normally we get a night off, but I don't think we get a night off this year.
No.
I missed what the Industrial Arts Auction raised last year. How much was that?
$235,000.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And should be able to do that again this year?
Yes. Think? Hope so.
It's a great, great part of the fair. So
it is. And that's Thursday, the first Thursday of the fair. So that's the 16th. And previews at 11. Auctions at 12. Auction and awards start at 12. And then goes right into Cattlemen's Day that evening.
Mm-hmm. It's a great day to be at the fair. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you.
For doing this. And we want to have a question. Go ahead.
Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. Where are you? I am an 80s kid, mm-hmm. So I didn't hear MTV,
yeah.
VJ, and are there discounts if we graduated in 80s?
There is a discount at Farm Supply. It's $11.50, so there you go. No, but there might be some pop-up things that happen at the fair. We've still got some fun things planned. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Colleen Borjegas, CEO, California Mid-State Fair. Thank you, Colleen. Next presentation we have is 4th of July event preview. Angelica Hortine, you have that for us?
Good evening, City Council. The Community Services Department is excited to be taking the lead role in planning this year's 4th of July. However, I have the honor of introducing Linda Plesha, who is our 4th of July committee chair this year, to actually provide the update. So please welcome Linda Plesha.
Hi, Linda. Hi.
Feeling pretty special about those claps. Thanks. Great, we've got the presentation up. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm Linda Plesha, Recreation Services Manager, and I have the privilege of coordinating this year's 4th of July celebration at Barney Schwartz Park. As our nation marks its 250th anniversary, we are looking forward to bringing the community together for an evening of patriotism, family fun, and celebration. There we go. An event of this size doesn't happen without a tremendous team effort. Since February, our planning committees have been working behind the scenes to coordinate every detail and create a memorable celebration worthy of this historic milestone. Staff from seven city departments have collaborated to develop and implement an extensive event plan, ensuring that everything from public safety to parking, entertainment, and guest services is ready for a safe and successful celebration. The stage comes alive at 5:30 with Garden Party, followed by Steppin' Out at 7 p.m. At 9 p.m., we'll pause to honor our country with the national anthem performed by rising country artist and seventh generation Chandon native Callie Twisselman before launching into the spectacular fireworks show. The Free Family Fun Zone returns to Field 1 and offers something for everyone, including inflatable obstacle courses and slides, water games, cornhole, axe throwing, they're silicone, bright day big blocks, and the new Paso Play on Wheels rec van. It's a great place for families to make memories while celebrating 250 years of American history. Community volunteers are the heart of the event. We have filled nearly all 60 volunteer shifts thanks to the generosity of local residents, the police department's community volunteer patrol, and community emergency response team volunteers. Their support helps us provide a safe, welcoming, and enjoyable experience for thousands of attendees. We're incredibly grateful to our 19 local business sponsors who have contributed approximately $95,000 in cash and in-kind support for this year's event. Their partnership helps ensure this cherished community tradition remains free for everyone and allows us to celebrate America's 250th birthday in a truly special way. As a thank you for their support, sponsors are invited to enjoy a catered barbecue, complimentary refreshments throughout the evening, and access to a reserved viewing area for one of the best seats in the park when the fireworks begin. On behalf of the event committee and our many partners, thank you for your continued support of this event. We look forward to welcoming thousands of residents and visitors to Barney Schwartz Park as we celebrate our nation's 250th anniversary together. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Real quick question on it there, Linda. Last year we had a firework total length about 20-25 minutes, wasn't it? Is that about what we're thinking about next this time? Or
we ordered the same length of show that we had last year.
That's what I thought. Okay.
It was pretty spectacular.
It's not a very short one. That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions from Linda? Very good. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Looking forward to that, and also all the volunteers that stepped up to help this all happen. I really appreciate that. Moving on, we have general public comments. This is the time that the public may address the council on items within its purview, but not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Council or staff may briefly respond to statements or questions posed by the public. Please fill out a speaker card and give it to the city clerk before you plan to speak. You'll have 3 minutes. Those people wishing to speak on any item scheduled on tonight's agenda will be given the opportunity to do so at the time the item is being considered. Anyone in public wish to make a public comment? Come forward. Welcome.
Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. What a wild weekend. I just wanted to bring to your guys' attention one more time, because I think we're getting really close there, the Fox Theater. They have that board so pulled out, and we have no squatter protection if somebody gets in there. Each time I drive by, I think the homeless are working on that board, so once they get in it, it's going to be a real big issue. I went to Safety Fest, and it was really cool. This year, I actually got to see up close the canine demonstration, and I would never want to be on that end of being tackled by one of those dogs. It was really kind of scary, to be honest. So I don't have, it's been a long weekend for me, but I just wanted to say that I got a lot of pictures. I sent them to Chief Nord. I thought that the Safety Fest is like one of the best festivals we have downtown, because, you know, I'm the queen of safety. So I hope it continues. And then the other thing that Dale forgets to say every meeting is, and got brought back up to me, when are we going to find out about the paid parking money? If we're ever going to get paid back. You guys have gotten away for almost 2 years about sweeping it under the carpet, hoping that one of us would not forget, or maybe forget, I should say. But somewhere along the line, that needs to be attended to, because I'm 3 parking tickets in, and I'd like my money back. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Public comment? Do we have anyone online, Mary?
No, sir.
Okay. Go ahead and then move on then to agenda items to be deferred. Mr. Huat, do we have any of that?
Mayor, no items. Excuse me, no items for deferral this evening.
Very good. Then we'll move on to overview of the items on consent calendar. We have 1 through 8 tonight.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Yes, as you mentioned, 8 items on the consent calendar tonight. The first is the approval of the meeting minutes for the June 2nd, 2026 regular city council meeting. The next is the receipt of advisory body minutes. This is for the airport commission for several meetings dating back to April of last year, then August of last year, October of last year, December of last year, and then finally February of this year. Item number 3 is the receipt of the warrant register. Since the last time we met, the city has made $2.8 million worth of payments. I'll cover those that exceed $100,000 or more, which I believe there are 5. The first is a payment to Granite Construction Company. This is related to the design contract for the South Vine Street Bridge in the amount of $449,019.07. Next is a payment to Mainline Engineering. This is for the Riverside Capitol Hill Almond area utility upgrades out of the water fund in the amount of $304,973.75. Next is a payment made to U.S. Bank. This is related to some wastewater revenue bonds that were issued in 2012, and this is the debt payment on those out of the wastewater fund in the amount of $420,978.65. Next is a payment to J.J. Fisher Construction. This is related to the construction contract associated with the pickleball court complex at Sherwood Park in the amount of $105,086.62. And then finally, a payment to the County Animal Services Division. This is related to the Q4 payment for animal control services that the county provides to the city in the amount of $122,327.50. Moving back to the consent calendar, item 4 is the appointment of Margaret Holstein to fill a spot on the Supplemental Sales Tax Oversight Committee. Number 5 is declaration of certain property as surplus and approval of disposal. This isn't real property. This is vehicles and computers and such. Item number 6 is the approval of a professional services agreement with Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County for senior center operating services. The city previously contracted for these services, and the prior operator was no longer able to provide services. City staff has been running the senior center on a day-to-day basis for the last several months as we issued an RFP and went through this process. This contract is budgeted for in next year's budget. And item number 7 is related to Commerce Way, which is, of course, a long-time road repair project that has been coming. This is the denial of a bid protest by CESA Construction and then an approval of a resolution that authorizes the construction contract to West Rock Engineering for those road repairs on Commerce Way. And then finally on the consent calendar tonight, number 8 is the approval to add an arborist, Seth Wilkie, to the city's certified arborist list. And with that, Mayor, we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Chris. Questions of council on anything here we have going on? Anybody wish to pull anything? Okay. Open up then to public. Anybody wishing to have any questions on the consent calendar, please come forward.
Dale Gustin, I just want to thank you for putting Margaret Holstein on the Oversight Committee. She has stepped up and been the president of Main Street since Norma Moy passed away, and she's doing an excellent job in that position. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Do we have anybody online, Mary?
No, sir.
Okay. Bring it back to council for direction and or action. Pro Tem Gregory.
I move that we approve consent agendas items 1 through 8.
Second.
Motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion? Okay, we'll call for the question, Mary.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Good, thank you. Moving on to public hearings, we'll open up public hearings, and we have the first one is approval of resolution confirming the existence of weeds and noxious growth creating a potential fire hazard and ordering their abatement. Paul Patty, you have that for us.
Good evening, Mayor Hammond, members of City Council and City Staff. Paul Patty, Battalion Chief Fire Marshal for the City of Paso Robles. The 2026 Hazardous Fuels Outlook. Paso Robles experienced a significant increase in rainfall this year. We recorded 16.36 inches of rainfall compared to 9.47 inches last year and exceeded our historic annual average since records began in 1942. While increased rainfall promotes healthy vegetation growth, the absence of periodic rain during the summer months causes grasses and weeds to dry rapidly, creating hazardous fuel conditions. The City of Paso Robles takes a proactive approach to reducing these fire hazards. In 2018, the City adopted an ordinance establishing minimum requirements for the abatement of hazardous weeds, fuels, and rubbish. Historically, vegetation fires within the city increase in both frequency and size between July and November. Over the past 5 years, the City has experienced a significant reduction in vegetation fires. This reduction reflects the success of our weed abatement program and Salinas River vegetation management and fuels mitigation efforts. Those would be the goats and sheep that are in there. 2026 hazardous fuels abatement inspections. The City of Paso Robles contains approximately 11,900 parcels. All parcels were inspected for compliance with our ordinance the second week of May. Initial inspections identified 662 non-compliant properties. Property owners found to be in violation were mailed notices to the address of record maintained by the county assessor. Follow-up inspections conducted during the last week in May and first week of June reduced that number of non-compliant properties from 662 to 195. Following the City Council's June 4, 2026 adoption of a resolution declaring certain properties to be public nuisance due to hazardous fuels and or refuse, a second notice was mailed to affected property owners and properties were physically posted with a notice of hearing for today's public hearing. Inspections have continued over the past 2 weeks with the number of non-compliant properties decreasing daily as we work towards our goal of full compliance before July 1st. As of this morning, the number of properties listed in Exhibit A has further been reduced to 23 properties that remain in violation of Ordinance 1068-NS. I have an updated Exhibit A for submission to the City Clerk and inclusion in the City Record. Tonight, staff requests that the remaining properties identified in Exhibit A be declared public nuisances, thereby authorizing the fire chief to proceed with abatement of hazardous fuels and or refuse in accordance with Ordinance Number 1068-NS. End of report.
Thank you, Paul. Questions of Paul Patty?
No.
Okay. Anybody out there wishing to come forward, please come forward. Welcome. Your public comment, you bet.
I don't usually speak in public, so.
State your name, ma'am.
I'm Tony Shireen. I have one of the properties stated, 88 Mountain Springs Road. I have pictures of my property as well. And I've also contacted the fire department and the city, and I think the fire chief, in reference to my property. When I got the first notice on my property, they stated, first notice was a generic notice that they sent to everybody, and I have pictures of this generic notice, okay? It doesn't specify what is wrong with my property per se, and I understand they have tons to send out, so I understand that, okay? But it doesn't help me to fix my issue if I don't know what the issue is, okay? So I contacted and I got somebody to look up what the report was on my property, and they said it was some weeds that were under some trees in my backyard. Those weeds were cleaned up. I knew nothing else other than that's what I was told. Okay, I left and went to Texas for 9 days, came back, and I have another notice on my property. Okay, so my point in doing this is there is a huge culvert runs down Mountain Springs Road. At the end of Mountain Springs Road, where you go up Almond Springs Road, there's a concrete area for that culvert. From that point down, there is rock to hold the culvert together. There is no concrete in that area at all. The weeds are overgrown. The weeds are taking over that whole culvert. The whole culvert is eroding all the way down. Anytime we get bad rains, it erodes even more. It's eroding right up to the road and right up to the side of my property. There's no weed abatement for that culvert. It was done last year per my son and I calling and asking who is in control of this culvert, because I don't know who to contact. Somebody came out, they cleaned the culvert to a certain point and stopped. They didn't go to the end of the culvert where the fire hydrant is and where the concrete ends. So none of that was cleaned out. It was just in front of my house. So I have pictures to show you, and maybe somebody can explain to me what they want me to clean up on my property. If you look at the pictures, or somebody looks at the pictures and says, hey, this is what you need to clean up. My property, when I moved into it in 2017-18, was nothing but coyote bush everywhere. From the retaining wall all the way around 360 was coyote bush. I did spider crawl throughout that whole property, cut the coyote bush with loppers by myself all the way, doing a ridge line to cover that mountain. That mountain goes up a slope like this, but I cut it at the very top of the slope. I had somebody inspect it from the fire department and said, where's the ridge line? Where do I stop? I have to have vegetation on that hillside. Okay. You can already see it coming down from the water seepage. So I can't maintain the vegetation and still not have it fall into my yard. So I need help trying to figure out where my citation is coming from, how to correct my citation, and if somebody is going to step in. I talked to somebody, said it's on the schedule to come out and fix the culvert for July, August. That doesn't stop my citations.
Okay, what we're gonna do is have Fire Chief or Fire Marshal Patty get a hold of you, probably maybe give a card, and we can probably do one-on-one to make sure you understand what needs to be done. And I'm assuming that culvert is in the city's right of way,
or they came out and fixed it before.
Because I know Mountain Springs is county. Paul, maybe we could take a look at that too. So yep. Anyway, we'll definitely get you fixed. And
they don't have my phone number on that
Paul's
card.
Paul's going to give you his card. Do you have a card or something? Yeah. Make contact with you afterwards. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
And you're not on the list.
I got another notice, so I didn't know.
Yeah, so we're on that. Definitely call me and I'll explain what's going on with the city.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience? Seeing none. Anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay. We'll go ahead and bring it back then to council for direction on item one, public hearing.
Mayor Hammond.
Pro Tem Gregory.
I move we approve resolution 26XXX, confirming the existence of public nuisance described in Exhibit A and ordering the abatement of weeds and noxious growth to abate the nuisance.
Second.
Motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Discussion? Okay, call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Moving on, we have public hearing and adoption of 2025 Urban Water Management Plan and readoption of the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. And Christopher's not here, but we have our water manager or water individual.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council, and members of the public. My name is Robert Devaney. I'm the water utility manager for the city of Paso. Joining me online is Christopher Akalel. He's the utilities director. He's home recovering from surgery. He's here in spirit. So tonight we're presenting the city's 2025 Urban Water Master Plan for adoption. Next slide. The item includes four attachments. One is the 2025 resolution for the water shortage contingency plan adoption. I'll speak a little bit more about why that's in there in a minute. Next is the resolution for the adoption of the urban water management plan, the actual plan itself, and then there are a few revisions that we included that arose after we published it for public comment. Next slide. So both the current urban water master plan and the shortage contingency plan were adopted in 2021. Preparation of the update to the water management plan began early this year, and we published a public draft on May 15th. Next slide. The purpose of the urban water management plan, it's a comprehensive planning document. All California water suppliers need to update it every 5 years. While it fulfills a regulatory requirement, it also serves as a long-range sort of planning document and roadmap for managing and protecting our water resources over the next 20 years and beyond. Next slide. So the plan documents current and projected water supplies, evaluates future water demands, outlines conservation and demand management strategies, and demonstrates how the city will continue to provide reliable water into the future for both normal and drought conditions. So the urban water management plan also includes the city's water shortage contingency plan. It's included as Appendix C in the plan itself. It's also being presented for you here for readoption. Staff reviewed the shortage contingency plan from 2020 and determined that it remains current. It continues to fulfill all regional needs and applicable state regulations, and so therefore no significant changes are required. So we're adopting it without changes. So the preparation of this plan has been a collaborative effort between the city staff and our consulting team. At this time, I would like to introduce Maureen Riley from Todd Groundwater, who's going to provide a more detailed overview of the plan.
Welcome, Maureen.
Hi. As Robert mentioned, my name is Maureen Riley. I'm principal engineer with Todd Groundwater, and we helped prepare the Urban Water Management Plan for 2025. We also helped the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. I'm joined with my team, Arden Wells and Kate White, and we're here today to present the Urban Water Management Plan and Water Shortage Contingency Plan. Oh, next slide. The basics of an urban water management plan is to look at the water demand, your water supply sources, and to see if they match. We also look at water supply reliability in terms of climate change, drought, and other natural disasters. And as Robert said, we have the water shortage contingency plan to look at just that. What happens in case water supply is insufficient? What's the backup plan? The 2025 Urban Water Management Plan remains very similar to the 2020. It's just an opportunity to update every 5 years. And this year, the requirements were very similar to the last period. The Urban Water Management Plan is prescribed by DWR, the Department of Water Resources. It's a state-level organization. And we have to update it every 5 years. The plan looks out 20 years into the future to make sure that you have adequate supply for growing demand. And it also tracks the mandated 20% reduction that we set back in the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan, and to make sure that the water use is sufficient and adequate within the city. It documents water supplies planned for existing and future demands, and also looks at short-term and long-term resource planning. A brief overview of units. We talk about a lot of different units in water. The first one is gallons per capita per day. This is water use per person per day. We look at the treated water delivered to the entire city over the course of a year, and then we divide by the total service area population and the number of days in a year. So you'll hear me mention gallons per capita per day. That's just the water use of a person for a day. Acre foot is what's commonly used in water supply. That represents 326,000 gallons, or basically filling a 1 acre property with 1 foot of water. And to give that in perspective, a single family home here uses about a third, so a third of an acre foot per year for a single family home for water demand. Water demand looks at the baseline and target. As I mentioned, there was a special legislation about water supply targets, water demand targets in 2010, and we looked at the baseline. What is the city currently using? And we look at a period 1999 to 2008 to see what was the starting point. Back then, it was 241 gallons per person per day. And over the course of each urban water management plan, there's been different targets to ratchet down that use, to get to that 20% reduction by 2020 and holding that steady onward. In 2015, you met it very well. The interim target was 217 gallons per capita per day, and the actual water use was 151. In 2020, the target then was 193 gallons per capita per day, and the 2020 usage was 164, and now in 2025, we're even less with 159. So great job. We've met the target and continue to maintain that adequate level of water demand per person. We look at future water demand. A lot of this is based on the city general plan build-out and the growth assumptions that you have made through your planning choices. We associate that with representative water demand factors, what is usually used for a single family home or a commercial development. And then we apply a little bit of future conservation. Yeah. Fixtures are getting more conservative. We have a lot more legislation coming in requiring conservation. And that's all baked into the table that you see up above. The first row is population. The city is growing in size over the projected horizon. We have to look out that 20 years to 2045, but we also have build out here for reference so you know where we're going. Water demands here are expressed in acre feet per year, and then we calculate the expected water use per capita per day, and we're still below that target that was set for 2020 and beyond. Once we have the future demand, we need to look at future supply to make sure we can meet that demand. Here in the city, you're lucky to have a portfolio of water supplies, and each one is represented by a different color on this chart, starting with the basin wells, groundwater aquifer wells on the bottom, wells that are close to the river that pull in some surface water as well as groundwater, Nacimiento water that comes to the water treatment plant, there's Nasi water that comes from recovery wells, and then recycled water to offset that potable demand. All in all, each one has its own growth over that time period, and we can see by the time we get to build out, there is adequate supply to meet demand with the various water supplies that you have access to. There's sufficient supply available for the existing community and planned growth, which is an important component of the urban water management plan. We'll continue to update the urban water management plan every 5 years to account for the growth and changes that occur over that time. Any changes in drought, climate change projections, or state requirements. And of course, the supply availability and reliability that changes over time. If there are changes from the general plan, different developments that were not considered, those are handled in water supply assessments per city policy, and they're handled one-on-one to make sure that they're not impacting the future water demand and supply of the city. The keys to continuing water supply reliability is to maintain that diverse portfolio of supplies. Because you have river water and groundwater and Nacimiento water, if any of those are disrupted, you have other sources to rely on. Each one has different reliability under different circumstances. And of course, recycled water is drought-proof, and it's a great way to help maintain that portfolio. It's also important to continue implementing water conservation And one whole chapter of the Urban Water Management Plan documents your water conservation efforts. I saw a sign on the way in. The city's doing a great job, and just to continue to implement those going forward. Again, continue planning for additional recycled water use that's not impacted by droughts or climate change and is a great way to have supply reliability. And finally, the city must prepare an annual water supply and demand assessment every year to look out for the next fiscal year to make sure you have available supply and demand. The water shortage contingency planning document is, like I said, exactly what it sounds. It's the backup plan for if supply doesn't meet demand in a single year. What the state has mandated is that there's different stages of water shortage. This could be because of a drought, an earthquake, another disruption. But stage one is where we are now, when no shortage, and it includes up to 10% reduction voluntary. There's different water conservation measures associated with each stage. Once we get to stage two, if there's a 20% shortage that happened statewide over the last drought, there's more mandatory measures that come in, irrigation limits and such. And as we go down the stages, the shortage increases as well as the mandatory conservation increases. So you get to where your supply does meet your demand. You've reduced your demand thanks to conservation in matching that supply. The water shortage contingency plan quantifies those conservation measures to make sure that the numbers add up and that you're actually saving based on those implementations. Oh, and there was no changes from the 2021, still the same plan. Finally, the city has sufficient supply for serving the existing and planned growth. The supply, again, is a diverse portfolio and reliable, and the city has achieved targeted conservation required by the state and will continue to meet those conservation programs as projected. The next steps are for you to approve the Urban Water Management Plan, and then we enter this information into the DWR Water Use Portal. It's a prescribed system of tables and text, and we're currently updating at this minute the portal to reflect all of your numbers to report into the state. Do you have any questions or comments on the plan?
Okay, thank you, Maureen. We'll go ahead and open up. Chris Beal.
Thank you for the presentation. Can you just go back to the per capita use,
yeah,
please, and tell us what number you're using for the volume used, like residential, commercial?
So there's this slide. When we calculated the targets, there was different methods that DWR prescribed. It's very much calculate this. I believe here we use the method one, which is looking at all water demand in the city, dividing it by the population. So your commercial is tied in there, industrial. It's not just residential use, but it is divided out over your population.
And then the big decrease in per capita demand there is primarily due to the change in landscape, right?
A lot of things happened between the baseline and the 2015. Part of that is recycled water kind of got a credit with baseline, and so we're only looking at the potable demand. Your recycled water is taken out, so you get a little bit of a bonus there. There was a drought in the early 2010s-ish that people conserved, and then we saw conservation just stay. Once people got a low-flow toilet, they kept the low-flow toilet. But it's also, we had the opportunity to choose the baseline period. It was 10 years, and we optimized to have the maximum baseline to have more flexibility.
And I think it's important for people to remember that these numbers can be very seasonally driven.
Very seasonal.
Based on rainfall, right? So the
right.
less rain that we get, the more water we're going to be applying for irrigation.
And it's the whole spectrum. So if you have a lot of rain, you don't have a lot of water use. If you don't have a lot of rain, you're making up for that with water use, watering your lawn. But if you're getting into that stage two or stage three of water conservation, you might have restrictions on watering your lawn. And so you might then see a decrease in per capita demand.
And this might be for you or it might be for Christopher. What do you anticipate